Mine was to promise to love someone else. My heart began to jackhammer, and the blood rushed to my ears. Her promise and mine linked themselves in my mind, in my goddamn heart. I promised, she was saying softly. I said yes. I didn't want to, and I didn't mean it. It felt impossible. But he was so tired. The tears were coming, and her voice turned weak and watery. He was so tired. But then I promised, and he was happy. 1,000 different emotions were boiling in me. My guts churned as if I'd eaten and then jumped on a roller coaster. He asked her to love again. He asked me to love her. What the fuck, Jonah? Casey wiped her face on the pillowcase. My hope is someday the promise will stop feeling so impossible to keep. But whether or not I do, at least it made him happy at the end. That's all that matters. She looked up at me. Isn't it? Yes, I said, like a croak. Then louder. Yes, that's the most important thing. She became engrossed in the movie, while I stared straight through the TV, lost in my head, unable to fathom the depth of my brother's heart. A man who told the love of his life, at the moment of goodbye, to love someone else. And to his brother, a promise to love her. The movie ended. Casey had fallen asleep. I slipped out of the bed I was lying on, put on my shoes, grabbed my jacket and tie. The door squeaked like a goddamn hyena, but Casey only stirred and slept on. I closed it tight, making sure it locked behind me. In the silent hallway to my own room, our promises, Casey's and mine, linked themselves again in my mind, around and around, like dancers at a wedding.
Chapter 18. Casey. I came home to a wet and rainy New Orleans. No sooner had I trundled my suitcase into my living room and shrugged off my jacket than I heard Yvonne shouting for me. I went to the kitchen and threw open the window. "This came for you," she said. "2 days ago." She tossed a small, flat, square package wrapped in brown paper across the small divide between our houses. "The rain was coming down fierce, so I rescued it." "Thanks, Yvonne." I knew what it was. A CD. And my heart skipped a beat. "How was the wedding?" she asked over the light rain smattering against our roofs. "It was nice," I said. "But I'm glad to be home." "Glad you're back too, baby," she said. "Come over tomorrow for beignets and tea and tell me all about it." "Deal." In my living room, I sat on the couch, turning the small package over in my hands. A small note was scrawled onto the front. "It's better than you can even imagine." I wasn't so sure. To Grant and Phoebe, this was an indie album we all hoped might sell a few copies. To me, it was a love affair. Mine and Jonah's, put to words and music. Start to finish. I took the CD case to my bedroom and set it on the bed next to the universe orb. "It was a beautiful ceremony," I said, as I changed out of my jeans and black silk blouse. "You should have seen Dina. She was radiant. And Oscar looked scared shitless, but also madly in love. And Teddy." I pulled on sleep shorts and my faded Wham t-shirt. You would have been so proud of him. He felt bad about being best man. He said he could feel how everyone was thinking about you. But he gave the most perfect speech. I sank onto the bed beside the orb, running my fingers over the smooth glass. But you know this, right? You were right there. You saw how he talked about you. We all did, all night. We miss you so much. You must know that. I sniffed as the tears dropped onto my white duvet. I pulled my laptop off the floor and slipped the CD into it. The first song, Riot Girl, began to play, and I curled around the universe orb and listened. I listened to a girl sing about the wreck she'd been and the sweet, noble man who'd given her the strength to stand on her own two feet. I listened to a girl sing about a love that altered her forever, down to her soul. I listened to her sing about moments slipping through her fingers like sand, and a grief so deep it nearly drowned her in an ocean of tears. I listened to a girl sing about her love's impossible courage, how, even at the end, her man's failing heart had strength to show her a future, even without him. I held the universe orb, clutched it to my heart, and listened to a girl fall apart in a song called The Lighthouse. When I sang the song at the clubs, it was always the emotional anchor that dragged me down and brought out the tears. I cried that night, great heaving sobs that made my stomach ache. But as I listened to this version of The Lighthouse, clean and pure, with no background noise, I heard something new. A violin behind the sad strum of a lone guitar and the girl's breaking voice. Its strings rose an octave higher than the guitar, rising in perfect harmony. It lifted up the refrain when, in the live performances, the refrain fell down. This time, I heard hope. As the last notes hung in the air and then dissipated, I felt a shift in my heart. A soothing hand closed around the deep ache. I picked up the universe orb, cradling it in my arms. I carried it across the room and set it on its stand on the dresser. Jonah, I whispered. I'm going to try this. I have to try to let you go now, because I think it's what you want, isn't it? It's what you've been trying to tell me. I don't know if I can let go entirely, but tonight, I'm going to try. I kissed the tips of my fingers, placed them over the orb and its lonely planet and swirling constellations. Live in the stars, baby. Okay? My voice cracked, but didn't break. And I smiled through my tears. You're free. You made me free. I know it was the trick of the bedroom light blurring my vision through my tears, but I swear I saw the luminescent swirls of a million stars in that glass orb flare brighter, all at once. I closed my eyes. I inhaled. You are a universe. I exhaled. No regret. Only love. and on the currents of that soft breath, I whisper to Jonah, "Good night, love. I love you. I will always love you." The lighthouse. The bottom of the bottle is where I don't have to feel. At the end of every night, I can pretend I'm not real. The shore is growing distant. The planks beneath me break. I sink into the deepest dark and beg the stars to take me into their infinite silence, where it is quiet upon quiet, in your still glass orbs, where no one can hear me cry. The lighthouse, at the edge of my world, has gone dark. I break myself on the rocky shores, sink beneath the waves, drowned in the downpour of my own tears, in unending rain, falling and filling an ocean of unbreathable pain. Your light went out forever. I could close my eyes. The black is black is black, like ashes against a night sky. A darkened lighthouse at the edge of the world is all that's left of this drowning girl. Part 2. You will heal, and you will rebuild yourself around the loss you have suffered. You will be whole again, but you will never be the same. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Chapter 19. Casey. 2 months later. "Teddy," I texted, "guess what?" I give up. I could practically see his smug little smirk. I rolled my eyes at my phone and typed back, "You didn't even try." "There's an 80s movie marathon on cable this week." "Almost as awesome." I bit my lip, not wanting to come across as bragging, but he was the first person I wanted to share the news with. "My album, Shattered Glass? It's number 1 on CD Baby and Beatport, number 6 on iTunes." I squinched my face up and hit send, then grinned ear to ear at Theo's reply. "Holy shit, calling." My phone lit up and I answered, "Holy shit." "That's fucking awesome, Case." "Thank you," I said, plucking at a stray thread on my couch pillow. My smile wouldn't dim. It took a little bit of time to get the ball rolling, but now the downloads are really steady. It's pretty crazy. Grant and Phoebe said The Lighthouse and 1 Million Moments were best-selling singles.
"Hell yeah, they are," Theo said. "Any record execs calling you yet?"
"No."
"They will."
"Grant thinks a video on YouTube will get their attention. He's full of ideas. Before we released the album, he talked about just me and a guitar and some candles in an empty room. But now that some money's coming in, he's thinking water tanks and special effects. Can you believe that?"
"I'm really damn happy for you, Case."
"Thanks, Teddy."
"So are these Olsen people legit? They're not ripping you off, are they?"
"So far, they're great. We have a contract. I pay them 15% of everything I make, plus a flat fee for the use of their studio and for production of actual CDs."
"Sounds fair."
"Sounds on the low end to me. If I ever make a shit ton of money, I'm going to take care of them. I wouldn't even be taking this next step if it weren't for them."
"What is the next step?"
I flumped back in the chair with a sigh. "Grant wants to do a release party."
"Where? When?"
"Next Friday, Le Chacal. I had Grant do it there so I can hang with Big E. I need all the friends there I can get. Hint, hint." I was teasing, and I wasn't.
"Shit, I wish I could,
Theo said.
But Gus is already up my ass about missing work, and I have class. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, I said, keeping the disappointment out of my voice. It's expensive, and it's short notice. I don't actually expect you to drop everything and fly out for a silly party. But I wanted him to, I realized. I missed him a lot, and our phone conversations were starting to feel like little crumbs of food when I wanted a big feast. When did that happen? I cleared my throat. So, anyway, I'll call you after. It'll be late.
I don't care, he said. I'll be here.
You're always so good to me.
I try to be, Case,
he said softly. A short silence fell, waiting like we were both holding our breath. I broke for air first. Okay, I should go, I said quickly. Give your mom a kiss for me.
Yeah, for sure, I will,
he said just as fast.
Good night, Case.
Good night, Teddy. The night of the party arrived, and I was nervous as hell. I put on black leather jeans and a silky gray blouse off the shoulder with billowy sleeves. I piled my hair on my head, pulling loose tendrils to frame my face. With a pang, I tucked the black rose Dina gave me at her wedding behind my ear. I wished she and Oscar were coming to celebrate with me. And Theo. And Jonah. A text came in on my phone before I headed out. Enjoy your party. You deserve this. A warmth bloomed in my chest as I replied. Thanks, Teddy. Heart. Le Chacal was packed to capacity. I'd never seen the club so full before. Jonathan, the skinny and balding owner, practically had dollar signs in his eyes at the amount of booze flowing. The doors and windows were open, and people and music spilled out onto the street. Passers-by who had no idea what was happening stopped to listen, and many stayed. I headed for the table Grant and Phoebe set up near the bar to sell CDs. I'd given myself a hand cramp signing 500 covers, thinking it was too much. No way we'd sell a fraction of them. 500 CDs sold out, Phoebe said, showing me the empty box. In record time.
At $10 a pop.
Grant held up his hands, grinning wide.
I know it's vulgar to discuss money, but let's just say it's not bad for a night's work.
Phoebe pressed a seltzer water with lime into my hand, which nearly sloshed all over the floor a minute later when Big E picked me up and swung me around. Yvonne had arrived too, with a couple of her friends, and we laughed and shout-talked over Louis Prima on the sound system. 10 minutes later, my phone vibrated from my back pocket with a text from Theo. Having fun yet? My brow furrowed. It's early, but yes. I started to send another, but he beat me to it. You wore that flower in your hair at the wedding. My head jerked up, my eyes scanning the crowd as my heart began to pound. No way. My eyes scanned the bar, then tracked back. Theo was standing with Big E, both of them grinning like dopes. My mouth dropped. No way! Theo was ridiculously handsome in a red wine-colored dress shirt, rolled up at the sleeves, and dark jeans. He gave me a cocky grin and waved hello with his phone. My heart, already so full of happiness, expanded in my chest as Theo's eyes held mine and his smile pulled wide. I pushed through the crowd as fast as I could and flung my arms around his neck. Are you kidding me? I held him tight, breathing him in, his skin, his cologne, feeling his strong arms around me and the laughter coming through his chest. I can't believe you're here, I cried.
I'm here.
You told me you had too much school, you big liar.
I do, he said. But funny thing about UNLV, they give us the weekends off. Weird, right?
I laughed, smacked his arm, then hugged him again. And you, I said, turning to Big E, you're his accomplice. The big bartender held up his hands.
I'm just as happy to see this guy as you are.
His warm gaze went between us.
Well, maybe not quite as happy.
I took Theo's hand. Come on, I want you to meet Grant and Phoebe, and I'm sure Yvonne would love to see you. Theo made a face.
Hope she left her baseball bat at home.
I introduced my Las Vegas friend to my New Orleans friends, and spent the rest of the night laughing and talking, surrounded by the people I loved. The crowd swelled, and soon Rufus signaled from the booth that it was time to play. I blew air out of my cheeks. Is it just me? Or is this crowd really big? Phoebe took my drink from my hand as Grant looped my guitar over my shoulder. Theo leaned in to be heard over the noise, his breath warm on my cheek, like a kiss.
Knock 'em dead.
I glanced up at him. Thanks, Teddy. The crowd was too loud, but I know he heard me anyway. I sang a few songs from the album, including The Lighthouse. The huge crowd gave me their silence, and I gave them everything I had. But I wasn't the drowned girl anymore. While I felt the ache of Jonah's absence in every word, in my mind, I heard a violin lifting up the refrain with hope. I infused the words with rich emotion, but I didn't cry. After I finished my set to resounding applause, a Zydeco band took the stage. They insisted I join in for a set. I wasn't fluent in their style of music, but I heard the changes and felt the flow, and soon was jamming with them. The crowd went crazy. My eyes kept seeking Theo in the crowd. Every time I did, I found his eyes on me. That intense look that only Theo Fletcher possessed. The look that made me feel, for a few brief moments, as if no one existed in his world but for me.
Chapter 20. Theo. The next day, Casey took me around New Orleans to all her favorite joints. Now that she was sober, she said, she could enjoy the city. She looked beautiful in a simple t-shirt and denim skirt, her skin glowing with health. The incredible blue of her eyes was brighter than I'd ever seen it. I love it here, she said over beignets at a small cafe. The city is so different from anywhere else I've ever been. She took a generous bite from her pastry, full of dancing ghosts. I nodded absently, only half hearing. You have some powdered sugar. I gestured at her lower lip that was dusted in white. She took a napkin and wiped it away. Gone? Gone. She'd wiped the powdered sugar from her mouth, but my imagination conjured me leaning over the table and sliding my tongue along the seam of her lips, tasting the sweetness. I was suddenly extremely grateful for the table concealing my lap, and took a long drink of ice water. Since Casey's revelation of her promise to Jonah, the little flicker of hope in my heart had flamed up into something constant, something permanent. It no longer felt like she and I were impossible. But what do I do? Tell her what I feel? I can't tell her. It's too soon. I'll fuck it all up. With any other girl, I'd already have had my hands in her hair and my tongue in her mouth, because I wouldn't give a shit what happened later. With Casey, I cared about all of it, this moment and everything after. "I'm so happy you're here," she said suddenly. "I know I'm a broken record, but I miss you." She frowned, her brows furrowed, as if she were trying to work out some complex problem. "I miss you a lot, actually. More than a lot. Is that weird?" "No." I coughed. "I miss you too." I stirred my coffee to conceal how her words hit me right in the chest. "But it sort of seems like you're done with Vegas." "I guess so," she said, still distracted by her own thoughts. "I'm doing okay here. I'm not drinking. I'm holding down my jobs, making friends, building a life." I nodded. She was closing a door and opening a new one, like that damn tarot card had said. Meanwhile, I was the hanged man. Getting a degree wouldn't help me if it meant buying a business in Vegas that would likely fail. If I moved to New Orleans, I could build a life here, too. "Are you finished?" Casey asked suddenly, indicating my food. "I need to walk." "Let's go." We left the cafe and walked along the French Quarter. I thought we were strolling aimlessly, enjoying the spring Saturday, but Casey had a plan. I realized we were walking along the edge of one of those famous New Orleans cemeteries, with row after row of little house-like crypts, sagging with time. It had to be 80 degrees out, but my skin broke out in goose flesh. "Let's go in," Casey said. "You sure?" She shot me a grin. "Why? Are you scared?" "No," I snorted. "It's just graveyards give me the fucking creeps." "A weird place to hang out." "It's historical," Casey said. "Suits my mood, too. Come on." I followed her through the open gates. The late morning sun glinted dully on a stone plaque. St. Louis Cemetery No. 2 chiseled into it. We walked among the rows of crypts. Flowers, beads, and candles were strewn at their doors. Some were fenced in with spike-tipped iron, some with pristine white marble. Most were browned with age, probably erected before Las Vegas was even founded. "Marie Laveau's crypt is in the St. Louis No. 1. Casey said. "She's the voodoo queen. We should go there sometime." I made a sound that could have been yes or no. I didn't even want to be in this cemetery, but it'd be a cold day in hell before I admitted that to Casey. We found a bench and took a seat as the sun rose higher behind the rows of crypts. "This place has restless spirits," Casey said. "Can you feel them?" "Well, shit, I can now," I thought, glancing around and rubbing my arms. Thankfully, Casey was lost in her own thoughts and didn't notice. "I'm restless, too," she said. "I feel like I'm always on the verge of something big. Then something big happens, like the album selling well or the show last night. I think, okay, that was it. That was the big something. But the next day, or the next hour even, the feeling is back. I'm always waiting for something else, but I have no idea what. It's unsettling." "I sort of feel the same way," I said. "But for me, I think the big something is what happens when I graduate."
"Then you start your own business," she said.
"Yeah, I guess. But fuck, it's risky. I can't tell if it's the wrong thing to do, or if it's just my nerves trying to talk me out of it, or my dad trying to talk me out of it."
"Don't let him talk you out of it," she said. "It's your dream. Don't let it go." she sounded like Jonah. Her conviction and her belief in me, exactly like his. Unconditional. Casey regarded me a moment, then glanced down at her hands, that same confusion as earlier twisting her features. "You're my best friend," she said. "And when I saw you at the bar with Big E last night, I felt so happy, more than happy, overjoyed." "Oh, yeah?" I said, trying to keep my voice level. "I get that a lot." She elbowed me in the side. "I'm being serious. I haven't felt like that in a long time." She looked up at me. "Is that what we are? Best friends?" "Well, I think... yeah, Case. You're my best friend." She bit her lip. "Are you seeing anyone? Someone special?" "No," I said slowly. "Not anyone special." "Oh," she said, tucking a lock of hair behind her ear. "Oscar makes it sound like maybe you are. Or, I don't know." "He's wrong," I said, harder than I intended. "He likes to take a joke and run it into the ground." She nodded. "It's none of my business anyway. I was just wondering." "I haven't seen anyone seriously since Holly." "What the hell?" But the words escaped, and there was no taking them back. Casey stared. "That was almost a year ago. You broke up with Holly that night at Grand Basin." She glanced up at me. "Why? I mean, why then and there, in the middle of the woods?" "Because I heard you sing, and I knew I'd never be the same." I shrugged, keeping my eyes fixed away. It wasn't going to happen between us. It felt wrong to string her along. "But why that night? Why not wait until after the trip?" I tried to think of a plausible reason. The truth, or a part of it, seemed the only way to go. I knew she'd want to have sex that night, but it was already over for me. Casey raised her brows with a knowing smile. "So you could have gotten laid one last time, but took the high road instead." "I'm not a total lowlife." "You're not any kind of lowlife," she said. "Funny. At the time, Dina and I thought what you did was kind of harsh. Turns out you were doing the right thing." "What about you?" I asked slowly, the words sticking to my teeth. "Seeing anyone?" "No, no," she said, hugged her elbows. "I'm not ready. I think about what it would be like, being on a date with another man, holding his hand or kissing him goodnight, and I can't do it. My mind won't even go there." "Because of Jonah," I said quietly. She nodded, dropped her gaze to her hands again. "I'm trying to let him go, you know, but I don't think that's something I can do, like flipping a switch. I think it's just something that will happen gradually, and I'll know it's happening because I'll start doing things again, going on dates, thinking about other guys." A thought pulled her lips down, and she looked up at me. Our eyes met, and my guard started to slip, the walls coming down. She sat so close, watching me, a vague notion starting to take root, realization creeping into her gaze. "Say something, Case. Do something, because I can't. It has to come from you. It has to be real," She leaned toward me. Teddy? I felt pulled down toward her. Yeah? Do you still visit Jonah's installation a lot? I blinked, and Casey's sheepish laugh broke the tension, hanging in the air like spun glass. Sorry, totally random. You've always been there for me. I wondered if you wanted to talk about it. Or him. Disappointment crashed me back to earth. No. I'm good. That's what you said last time, she said. Are you really? I'm fine, Case. Promise. Casey turned on the bench to face me. Teddy, I'm here for you. Even hundreds of miles away, I'm here. If you ever need me like I needed you. I wanted to touch her face. I wanted to tell her I needed her in a way she couldn't imagine. I wanted to tell her the truth. Casey. But I couldn't say it. The words, born in my heart, rose up and became stuck in my throat, trapped by excuses. It's too soon. She's not ready. She said it herself. Thanks. I'm here for you, too. God, you're pathetic. Casey nodded. Because we're friends. And friends miss each other when they're apart, and they're happy to see each other when they're together. It makes sense. Right? Sure, I said slowly. She sighed. I guess that's it, then. We started back for her house. But the perplexed look on her face wouldn't leave. Friends love each other, too. I wanted to tell her, but it was too late. The moment had slipped out of my fingers, and I'd let it.
Chapter 21. Casey. Grant Olson's grin was so wide I thought it would tip his glasses off.
And that, as they say in the business, is a wrap.
Thank God, I said, as a production assistant wrapped a towel around me. I look like a drowned rat. Phoebe handed me a hot coffee. I would tell you that's not true, but I like to keep my relationships honest. I stuck my tongue out at her. The set for the music video to Lighthouse was a black, windowless, boxy room with cables and lines staking all across the floor. Two floodlights with blue and green filters beaming down on the water tank I'd spent the last 3 days in. The director Grant hired had envisioned a girl trapped in the tank while a man, his face always obscured by shadow, was just out of reach on the other side of the glass. Using some fairly expensive CGI, they were going to pull the video of me in the water and superpose it on shots of people in everyday life. At a cocktail party, at an apartment, in the bedroom of my cheating boyfriend and his lover. I would be the drowned girl, always submerged, while life went on around me. I appreciated the theme of a cheating boyfriend and not a dead one. I wouldn't have agreed to it otherwise. I would never have let some actor portray Jonah in a dramatic rendition of us. It would have felt cheap and disrespectful, exploiting what we'd had for a silly video. Even with the changed narrative, I thought the shoot would be emotionally draining. But the video was shot out of order, chopping and shuffling up the story until it was unrecognizable. Take after take, until the takes blurred together. The constant technical adjustments, the stops and starts, the dauntless struggle not to let air bubbles leak out of my nose and ruin a scene. After 3 days, I was tired of the lighthouse. I dried off while the Olsons updated me on record sales. "You're a hit, girl," Phoebe said, shuffling some papers. "This video is going to put you over the top." "Thanks to you guys. None of this would have been possible without you."
"Just don't forget us when you're accepting your Grammy,"
Grant said, still grinning.
"I won't."
"You can't," Phoebe said, her eyes flashing. "We put it in your contract." She flicked her fingers at her brother then. "Go away. We have girl talk."
"We do?" I asked.
She waited until Grant was out of sight. "Matt Porter asked me if you were single." Matt was the graphic designer doing the cover for Shattered Glass. Cute, dry sense of humor, nice smile.
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah." Phoebe nudged my arm. "So?" "I don't know," I said. "I'll think about it." Even saying that sent guilt curling around my heart, and that unsettled feeling I'd told Theo about hit me with a vengeance. If I wanted to shut that door the tarot card told me about and start a new chapter, I had to do something, or maybe a bunch of big somethings. I drove my little car home, where I stood in the entry. Home, yet feeling untethered. I had success now. Money in my bank account, good friends, and a career that seemed to be taking off. Shut the door. Do something big. Before I could talk myself out of it, I called my parents' house in San Diego. The ringing went to the answering machine. After my mother's halting voice said to leave a message, I sucked in a deep breath. "Hi, Mom."
"Hi, Dad."
"It's Casey. I haven't called in almost 8 months. I don't know if you tried to call me. I got rid of my old cell phone. But I have a new number now. I'm living in New Orleans. My music career is taking off. As a solo artist this time. And I'm taking care of myself." I took another breath, feeling the urge to hurry. If the machine cut me off, I wouldn't have the guts to call again. "I'm doing really well, and I just wanted to let you know. I'm okay. And also..." I exhaled and sat up straighter. "This is the last time I'm going to call you. I can't keep trying and getting no response. If you want to talk to me, I'm here."
"Okay, Mom?"
"If you want to talk, you call me. If not, well, then I hope you both have a long and happy life." I left them my new cell phone number and hung up. My heart was pounding, and tears stung my eyes, but I wiped them away and huffed a breath. That's a start. I glanced around my shabby little place with its second-hand mismatched furniture, old linoleum floors, cruddy tile countertops, and cheap stained carpet. The bones of the house, as they were always saying on HGTV shows, were good. It was a classic New Orleans shotgun. It deserved better than this. I called the bank that owned the house and set up an appointment for the following day. I didn't call Theo that night, and for whatever reason, he didn't call me. I went into the bank the next day at 2 p.m., and by 5 o'clock, I was in escrow. Outside the bank, I paused to catch my breath, my heart racing for the amount of money I'd just committed myself to paying. $64,000 wasn't a huge mortgage payment, but I took out a loan of $75,000 in order to make some renovations. I'd never owed more money in my life. But I wanted roots, a place of my own where I could dig in, stay grounded. I wasn't about to be whisked off on a road tour or lose myself in the big Los Angeles music industry. My pounding heart slowed, but inexplicably,
It left me with that same hollow feeling I'd had before I left for the bank. What is wrong with me? I'd settled up with my parents, bought a fucking house for crying out loud, but I still felt like something was missing. I called Phoebe and told her I was free on Friday, if Matt Porter was still interested. She assured me he was, and she'd give him my number. I hung up. I waited to feel satisfied. I felt slightly nauseated instead. That night, I picked up my dinner while sitting on the couch, and then watched Big Trouble in Little China until midnight. It was 10 in Vegas, and Theo was out of class. "Guess what?" I said, my dinner suddenly churning in my gut.
"You finished shooting the music video,"
he said. "Yesterday," I said. "Also, I called my parents for the last time. Left a message. If they want to talk, they can call me. But I'm done offering my hand only to have it slapped back."
"Good for you, babe,"
Theo said. It was 80 degrees in my house, but a shiver slipped up my spine, morphed into a nervous laugh that burst out of me. "Babe?"
"Ah, sorry. Case,"
he said. "You have too many women to juggle," I said, plucking mercilessly at the couch cushion. "I can see how we all start to blend in."
"Yeah, okay,"
he coughed, cleared his throat.
"So it's good you settled things with your parents, Case."
"That's not all I settled," I said. "I bought my house. I'm a homeowner. Shoot me now."
"You did?"
A short silence.
"Wow, that's great. So, I guess you're in New Orleans for good."
I twirled a lock of hair around my finger. "I guess so. I think so. I think it's what I need to do, to settle somewhere that's mine."
"Permanence."
"Exactly. And it feels right to be here and not in Vegas," I said. I thought about it, tried to picture myself back there, and I just can't. I hunched my shoulders. "I hope it doesn't upset Beverly too much."
"She'll understand,"
he said. I bit my lip. "In other news, I have a date on Friday." The silence stretched out taut. I checked my phone to see if we'd been disconnected. "Teddy?"
"I'm here."
"Yeah, I think there might be the tiniest tread of a possibility. I'm ready for it." I laughed nervously. "Won't know until I find out."
"Guess not."
He sounded flat, bored. It didn't seem to faze him about the house or the date. "Because we're friends." I yawned loudly. "I'm tired. Buying a house wears a gal out. Talk to you tomorrow?"
"I'll be here. Night."
"Good night, Teddy," I said. But he'd already hung up.
Chapter 22. Theo. Over the next week, I kept up my routine, same as always. The alarm went off, my hand snaked out to shut it off, and I had 3 seconds of peace before reality slammed into me. Only now the first thought was, Casey's not coming back from New Orleans. Followed by, and she's got a date on Friday. I didn't know which was worse. The date. The date is definitely fucking worse. I didn't begrudge her any big somethings. She needed to do what was best for her, to heal and move on. But she's going on a fucking date. I got to work that day in a pissy mood. No one was manning the front desk, so I picked up Vivian's magic 8-ball. I shook it hard, silently asking the black and white blur, Will it end with Casey throwing a drink in his face and never seeing him again? I watched intently as the blue triangle righted itself. Ask again later. Not what I was hoping for, but I'd take it. I headed back to my station. Zelda and Edgar were already at theirs. "Hey, guys," I said, "can I get your opinion on something?" They gathered around as I opened my portfolio and laid out some ink and watercolor sketches on my tattoo chair. I'd been working on them since the last time I was in New Orleans, trying to keep my mind occupied.
"What's this?" Edgar said,
picking up my sketch of an African savanna, spare with only the black silhouettes of two giraffes on the right side, a soaring ibis on the other, with a boiling, heat-wavered sun in reds and oranges indistinctly rendered along the back.
"This is cool shit, bro."
"I fucking love this," Zelda said, inspecting a black ink sketch of a sugar skull in profile, with bright reds, blues, and yellows shaded through it. She peered up at me. "It looks unfinished."
"But it is finished, isn't it?"
I rubbed the back of my neck. "Yeah, that's the idea, that the coloring highlights the black ink, but doesn't fill it in or overwhelm it."
"This is killer shit, T," Edgar said,
holding a sketch of a woman's eye, with long, dark lashes and an arching brow. The pale blue of the iris was circled with a darker cobalt, and the skin tone of the woman's face was only partly hinted at.
"You going to show this to Inked?"
"Once it's on skin, yeah," I said. "On paper, it's just a drawing."
"I volunteer my services," Edgar said.
He slapped his upper arm. "I appreciate that," I said, "but I'm not trying to pressure you guys. I just wanted your thoughts. See if they might be something."
"Got it," Edgar said. "And my thoughts are, I want one."
"Really? Thanks, man. I'm honored." Zelda handed the sketches back. "I have a client who would kill for one of these," she said. "I'll send her your way. For a small finder's fee," she added with a smirk, and returned to her station.
"You gone shy on us, Rossi?" Edgar called after her. "The idea of the Theo's manly man hands on your bare skin too much for you?"
"Bite me," Zelda said, busying herself with her inks. "Be cool, man," I said to Edgar in a low voice. He slapped me on the back.
"Just playing, bro."
He tapped the sketch of the sugar skull.
"Can you give me this with more reds and orange?"
"Sure. We can start tomorrow." We clasped hands. "I really appreciate it."
"Dude, it's rad. Inked is going to be all over this."
I hoped so. The idea for the unfinished tattoos came to me the night before, right as I was falling asleep. I'd spent most of the night making the sketches to keep the idea from slipping into the abyss of forgotten good ideas. A small smile played around my mouth as I packed the sketches up. If this idea took off, it'd make me feel a hell of a lot better about buying my own place. Maybe I'd have a little bit of a name for myself to stave off the fear of utter and total failure. Ideas for other sketches came to me as I readied my station. Tarot cards and jazz halls, cemeteries and voodoo dolls. Vegas was overflowing with tattoo shops. The New Orleans market was much wider. I knew this because I'd researched the city last night. Maybe Casey buying a house in the Big Easy wasn't such a terrible tragedy after all. Or a closed door. Maybe it was a door opening. For both of us. My cell phone rang as I finished with my first client. I frowned at the number.
"What's up, Ma?"
"Theo?"
Her voice sounded weak and shaky.
"I hate to bother you, but..."
"What is it?" I asked, my heart thudding. "You okay?"
"Oh, I'm... having a bad day, she said. I was going through some old boxes and found some photos.
She sniffed and forced a small laugh.
I'm a bit of a mess, but I promised Lois I'd bake eggplant parmesan for our cribbage tomorrow. I can't seem to muster the energy to clean up and make myself presentable for the grocery store.
I get it, Ma, I said gently. What do you need me to do?
Would you run to the store for me? I'm sure I'll be fine by tomorrow, but if I don't get started tonight...
Where's Dad? I asked, trying to keep my tone even.
Oh, you know him. He's at the office. Says he can't get away.
I closed my eyes for a moment, then glanced at the entrance where a couple of clients were waiting.
Are you busy? She asked. I'm so sorry, dear. I feel so useless.
No, Ma, it's fine, I said. Give me a list of what you need. I'll go now.
You're so good to me,
she said, tears thickening her words.
I was blessed with two wonderful sons, wasn't I?
Pain squeezed my heart. I got the grocery list from her, then gathered my stuff.
Where are you going? Vivian asked from the front desk. You have a client coming in 20 minutes.
Call them back, would you? See if you can push it to 40. She shook her head, but took up the receiver.
You're lucky you're so damn cute, she muttered.
Thanks, Viv. You're the best. I stopped, grabbed her magic 8-ball, and gave it a shake.
You asking if Gus is going to fire your ass? She muttered, her hand over the phone's mouthpiece. Spoiler alert. It is certain.
She turned aside.
Yes, hi, is this Brittany? This is Vivian from Vegas Inc.
I didn't ask the toy if Gus was going to fire me, but the same question I had this morning. It was later, so I was asking again later. I swear the fucking triangle looked smug as it floated its answer. Outlook not so good. After I tore through the grocery store with Mom's list, I screeched my truck into the drive. My 40 minutes was up. I was nearly an hour out of the shop. But my hopes for dropping off the food here and heading back out were smashed to pieces when I found my mother sitting on the living room floor, 100 photos spread out around her on all sides, and one held slack in her hand as she cried. Christ! I dropped the grocery bags and hurried to kneel beside her. Come on, Ma. Let's get you to the couch.
He was so handsome, she murmured,
staring at the photo in her hand of Jonah at UNLV graduation, wearing a red gown and red cap. She didn't pull her eyes from the photo as I lifted her off the floor and helped her sit on the couch. Then she looked